Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has been pushing to ban kratom, or maybe you've heard it called kratom. However you say it, the governor put a pause on the ban after talking with Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about this substance, what it's used for, and the concerns some people have raised are Canaccord Group founding partner Paula Sepchenko, Case Western Reserve University Assistant Professor Stephanie Pike Moore, and Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau correspondent Sarah Donaldson. Thank you all so much for being here.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Paula, what is kratom and what is it used for?
Yes, thank you so much for having us. Kratom comes from the plant Mitragyna speciosa. And then when you get the raw powder from the plant, you get kratom powder that's then put into tablets. From there, you can also extract different alkaloids. So the kratom powder has different alkaloids in it, similar to how in cannabis there are different cannabinoids. We actually don't know how many different alkaloids there are in kratom or in the plant Mitragyna speciosa at this time, but there are three main alkaloids that are marketed regularly in this industry, which are pseudonoxanil, mitragynine, and 7-hydroxy. Now, they basically all are part of the whole leaf plant matter, kratom, right? And then they can be extracted out as well. They are used as a natural product by approximately 500 million. There have been approximately 500 million doses of 7-hydroxy specifically, which is one of the alkaloids. And we believe there's been more of kratom. So
what are people use it for? Why are they?
So people are using it as for a few different reasons. One being to help with pain relief, a natural alternative to opioids. Another is just for mental health, clarity, day-to-day wellness. And another that's really interesting is to actually, it's actually used to get off of opioids. So we're seeing a lot of success across the U.S., across the nation with individuals that have been addicted to opioids for years and are really not able to get off, have been, you know, in and out of rehab, and then are start using 7-hydroxy or kratom, and then are really benefiting from these uses, right? And then are transitioning to no longer using opioids and only using 7-hydroxy or kratom.
Huh, interesting. Stephanie, let me ask you this. So kratom is not a form of opioid. People use it to get off opioids, but it's not a form of an opioid in any way?
So it's interesting because the two main psychoactive properties, as Paula had mentioned, they act on the same opioid receptors in the brain that, you know, traditional opioids act on.
Huh. Okay. So does that mean it's not an opioid, but it acts like an opioid?
It acts in the brain much like an opioid, which means that this sort of affinity it has for those receptors in the brain, that these particular chemicals can carry the risk for dependence and withdrawal, as well as some more long-term side effects.
Hmm. Sarah, is it regulated in any way by the state or the federal government?
So the Food and Drug Administration has not greenlit consuming kratom or using it medically, but there isn't really like a ban on it in Ohio. Of course, I'm sure as we're about to talk about, Governor Mike DeWine had called on the pharmacy board to look into a ban. But that regulation argument is kind of playing out in some ways the same way that it has been playing out with Delta-8 THC and other cannabinoid derivatives that kind of mimic what kind of an effect legal regulated cannabis has.
Sarah Art, so you mentioned it's not really regulated. Are there any age restrictions for who can buy kratom these days in Ohio?
No. So there have been bills in prior legislative sessions to treat kratom as something that would have an age restriction, have more testing regulations. Again, the same things you're kind of hearing about with Delta 8 THC and other similar products, but those bills haven't gone anywhere. So, you know, I know there are some organizations, including the American Kratom Association. So that's a advocacy group for regulation of kratom. They don't want to see kratom outright banned. But, you know, their founder has said that their head has said that he does want to see states adopt more regulations of the products.
We're talking about kratom, what it is, what it does, and why Governor DeWine has talked about banning it in Ohio. Do you have questions or comments, or do you have experience with kratom? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Stephanie, Paula at the top of our conversation talked about there are different alkaloids, I think she said, that come from the kratom plant. Can you explain the difference scientifically between natural and synthetic kratom? There seems to be a distinction there that some people are making.
So a lot of what we see on the shelves today, and I think the topic of Governor DeWine's proposed ban, is the 7-hydroxymetragenine, or 7-O. Now, this does not naturally occur in high concentrations in the plant itself. So in order to get it at the level that it exists in many of these products, it has to be sort of semi-synthetically created in a lab. So much of what you see with respect to 7-O is often not from the plant itself, but has been synthesized in a lab.
And Sarah just mentioned other synthetic unregulated substances in Ohio. It's not just, you know, kratom or synthetic kratom. What are the challenges with trying to regulate these synthetic products like Delta 8 and some of these other things?
I think the industry is ahead of our ability to capture things using traditional epidemiologic surveillance. We're currently at a point in time where things are just popping onto shelves so quickly. And in order to really capture the impact of these products, you have to, number one, know that they're there. So you have to be routinely surveilling the retailer situation. And then you need to evaluate, you know, is this having an impact? Do we see more calls happening in poison control centers? Do we see more emergency room visits? Do we see an associated relation to, you know, fatality? So all of this happens much, much more slowly than we would like. And it's very difficult to keep up with an industry that continues to evolve more and more rapidly.
And I think in addition to what Stephanie's saying, when you're talking about here at the State House and why these regulations have kind of gotten held up, you've heard kind of this back and forth about, you know, maybe safety and particularly children's safety. I think an age restriction on any of these products is something that's pretty like across the board backed. But there are lawmakers who have heard from businesses, you know, different retailers like gas stations, corner stores, smoke stores that are selling these products who say that it would really, you know, hurt them and put them out of business. There are also like a lot of these fall under this like natural wellness branding, but whether it's Delta 8, whether it's kratom, whether it's, you know, I saw Delta 11 THC on the shelves at a grocery store this weekend, which that's the first time I've ever seen Delta 11, but there's so many different products and they are, I think these businesses that do sell them have certainly had a voice here at the State House and have certainly made some lawmakers wary of, you know, potentially putting them out of business.
Paula, I want to get you back into this conversation. What do you think about all this, the idea of age restrictions and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, right? And I agree with what Stephanie is saying, right? I think, and Sarah, I think we're all kind of saying the same thing. We do agree that we need regulation in this industry. And I think there isn't enough regulations. However, I don't think you know, and the industry really doesn't support a complete across the board ban on kratom, so, you know, or its alkaloids. And I think it's really important to talk about for a minute the difference between kratom and its alkaloids, right? So there's kratom and then there's 7-hydroxy.
That's the 7-0 that Stephanie was referencing.
That's right. And as Stephanie explained, you know, it's that all 7-hydroxy, it does come from the kratom plant, from Mitrogena speciosa. And then it can be synthesized to then have a higher level in the extract. There really is not in existence a fully synthetic 7-OH. It doesn't exist. So there can only really be partially synthetic. But it's kind of similar to how, you know, pretty much all of the vitamin C that's on the shelves is also partially synthesized. So it's partially synthetic. Because you're not going to go out and squeeze, you know, a million oranges to get the vitamin C to supply for that supply and be able to fulfill the supply that's needed. So therefore you extract it, synthesize it, and it's a partially synthesized product. And so I think there's been a lot of misinformation about, oh, this is a synthetic product and this is bad. That's really not the case. It does still come from the plant itself. Similar to vitamin C. So I think that's important to talk about. Then it's also important to talk about how when users use kratom, it is a more full, you know, full plant material, and it does have different alkaloids in it. Users are reporting that they need to take a larger amount of kratom to get the same effects that they would get from taking 7-hydroxy. And really that's, you know, that's important to discuss because when you're taking a larger amount of a product, it's more for your body to process, right? And so it's not always the best case. And so it's a really good thing that we're able to extract the specific alkaloids and provide those.
Paula, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that brings a question to mind, and that is, I thought I had read that the American Kratom Association argues that synthetics like 7-OH or 7-O should be regulated, but that natural kratoms, what it refers to as natural kratom, I guess more the plant substance, shouldn't be. Do I understand that correctly? Can you talk about that?
So that has been the American Kratom Association, and GKC and VivaZen position. Yes. So this is an incredibly politically charged issue. And really what's happened here is the kratom industry has been successfully marketing and making a lot of money in selling kratom for 10, 15 years. 2 years ago, 7-hydroxy came on the market, and the 7-hydroxy industry pretty much took over 70% of the kratom industry's market share. The kratom industry didn't like that and therefore started painting 7-hydroxy in a negative light to regulators, to the federal and state governments. And essentially what the kratom industry would like to see happen would be for 7-hydroxy to be banned, not just regulated, but to be banned, scheduled as a controlled substance, and then for the kratom industry to come in and take that market share up. Now, the public clearly has a preference for 7-hydroxy over kratom for the reason that I was just explaining, because it is, you need to take less.
Yeah, more concentrated. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right. And so there's been a lot of misinformation from the kratom industry about how 7-hydroxy is bad. I mean, even down to skewing the research that's been done. I mean, the research that was done by McCurdy, we basically the way that that was done was by injecting mice with that's the research done at UF in Florida, injecting mice with 7-hydroxy. Well, that's not how 7-hydroxy is administered, and 7-hydroxy is administered orally. And so that's not an accurate representation of, is 7-hydroxy good for the public or not? Does it create an imminent harm or not? Right? Because part of the reason why we've seen such a success with 7-hydroxy as it relates to the opioid epidemic is because it doesn't shut down your respiratory system the same way that opioids do when you take it orally. But it's possible that it could when you inject it. And so there's just been a lot of misinformation spread about these products because of the financial and political background of what, how the kratom industry has pushed this.
Stephanie, sorry, I want to bring Stephanie back into this. From a, what does the science show other than this Florida study that that Paula just referenced? Is this a matter of misinformation and politics, do you think? Can 7-OH or kratom be dangerous for people?
I think it's a complicated answer, but most of that really comes from just a lack of studies conducted on these products. The research does suggest that 7-OH can have a greater affinity for your opioid receptors in your brain that might be more comparable to something like morphine. In addition, we see a lot more kratom-related deaths. Now, whether or not we can distinguish those from 7-OH is challenging because 7-OH, or 7-O rather, is a metabolite, which means that as you digest kratom, it turns into 7-O. So surveilling that is problematic. But what we do see consistently is this uptick or increase in kratom-associated fatalities when people overdose. In addition to that, we know that kratom itself and 7-O are likely contributing to greater risk profiles, meaning that people don't just take 7-O or kratom. They're using a wider variety of substances than just kratom. There are very few people who just take that in itself. So it does pose a bit of a risk, especially because it's so easily accessible and widely available. And the way that it's marketed as a form of harm reduction, as a sort of quote unquote natural dietary supplement, makes it a little bit problematic, especially since there's no regulating body in how these products are produced, how they're labeled. There's so much variety and variability between the products that are available on store shelves that make it really complicated to determine, like, something as easy as a dose. Like, people don't know how much they should take. And sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that it does sound complicated. Sarah, we referenced earlier Governor DeWine has called for a ban on kratom. He paused that after a conversation with Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. What do we know about that? Where all that stands?
Yeah, I don't think we've heard much since then, but I know that the governor's office said that it's not that DeWine was like abandoning this idea for a ban. I think they were just pausing it to make sure that that conversation could take place. And DeWine still seemed apt, at least the last time the State House News Bureau talked to the governor's office, to seek a ban on all kratom, not just that 7-OH that we've been talking about. But I do think that really quickly, I think that Paula brings up an interesting point. And again, I hate to keep drawing us back to marijuana and Delta 8, but you do see arguments from Delta 8 businesses and other cannabinoid businesses who feel like their hemp-derived products are being targeted by the marijuana industry because the marijuana industry has to go through, I mean, dispensaries have to go through a ton of hoops to get up and running to be able to sell marijuana. So it is interesting because obviously I mean, they're on different paths. There's a reason, like, hemp was kind of deregulated by the federal government in 2018, and kratom has never really been truly like regulated. It's kind of always been in this gray area, but it's interesting to see those arguments play out across the products.
Paula,
I completely, oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I completely agree, Sarah. I have also related this to the fight between the marijuana industry and the hemp industry, to be the fight between the kratom industry and the 7-hydroxy industry. And it's been really interesting to watch, but it's also incredibly frustrating because it's affecting the public, right? Because so the states that there's two states that have banned 7-hydroxy. It's Utah and Arizona. These are the only two states that we've seen opiate overdose deaths went up in 2024. And this is directly from the CDC's information. Then the states that have the largest 7-hydroxy consumption had the largest drop in opiate overdose deaths. So you have Florida at 34%, South Carolina 33%, Virginia 40%, West Virginia 43%, Tennessee 34%, and it continues on. And so there is really a direct link to when 7-hydroxy hit the market to and the opioid epidemic decreasing. Now, of course, it's not the only reason that the opioid epidemic has decreased, but it is a large part thereof. And so, we don't want to see more states start banning 7-hydroxy because of this politically charged issue. And it's also very concerning that the federal government has now, the FDA, as you were speaking to about, with Sarah, has recommended to the DEA to schedule 7-hydroxy as a controlled substance. Now, it's going to be very, we've done public records requests to get the information on what are they relying on, because from our information and Stephanie, I would like to have more information about where you're getting your information from on deaths related to kratom and 7-hydroxy or caused by 7-hydroxy or kratom, because from my end, I'm not seeing that there are any deaths that are reported from 7-hydroxy or kratom alone.
Yeah,
All
let's
of
ask
those
Stephanie
deaths
about
have
that. What,
been
yeah.
poly deaths, actually.
What data are you seeing, Stephanie, in terms of deaths? And are you seeing data that corresponds to kratom bans and a spike in opioid deaths? So has there been research into all that?
So there has been research into deaths related to kratom. So the CDC's Suitors database, so the I don't remember what the acronym stands for, but their database shows that even back as far back as 2017, 2018, at least 91 deaths were caused by kratom alone out of 152 deaths. That involved kratom because we know that kratom is associated with a lot of other substance use. So people who overdosed likely have multiple substances in their system. And that's grown to be more than 2,000 over the past couple of years. So just 91 deaths, or rather 152 kratom-related deaths to what we're seeing today, which is much more than expected. To your point about the scheduling of these products, I think it's a little bit problematic, in the sense that if these products are being marketed as a form for harm reduction, it would have made more sense to sort of go through the FDA, to essentially get these products approved for that use, which we don't see happening. It's kind of like they put the cart before the horse in the sense that they haven't demonstrated safety or efficacy with respect to these products, both kratom and 7-O, and are trying to establish the products themselves as medications distinct from dietary supplements. What this means is that people who might suffer from things like opiate use disorder might have a harder time quitting because they think that the medication itself can help deal with the underlying disorder. But we know that when people engage in treatment that involves, a broad array of, interpersonal counseling, group support, and all these other factors that help facilitate somebody quitting, it's not just medication alone.
And have you seen information or data that supports what Paula was talking about, Stephanie, in terms of bands of 7-O or 7-OH and spikes in opioid overdose deaths?
I think it would be too nascent to make that conclusion, especially since 7-O came onto the market in 2023, and our death reporting is often lagged by a couple of years. So any data that we have right now is certainly preliminary, in the sense of measuring that effect. We also don't have good data sources on sales of 7-O. So I'm curious and interested to hear where that data itself might come from.
Sarah, this has gone so fast and we're running out of time, but do you have any idea when we might hear more from Governor DeWine about what's next with this?
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm sure he'll be saying more about it soon. Of course, it sounds like he wants to maybe take some action outside of the legislature's purview, but I know I talked to at least one lawmaker who has been, active in the Delta 8 space, who told me that they are also looking at, some sort of a kratom bill as well, again, because there was one last legislative session, but it died. It never moved on. So we'll have to see if Governor DeWine's way is the way, if lawmakers choose to do something, or if nothing happens, because that's been the case with Delta 8 since 2023.
This has been a fascinating conversation. I've been talking with Canaccord Group founding partner Paula Sapchenko, Case Western Reserve University Assistant Professor Stephanie Pike Moore, and Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau correspondent Sarah Donaldson. Thank you all so much for your time today. Up next, we'll talk about a program that buses public school students off-site for Bible lessons during the school day. This is Cincinnati Edition.